Hello and welcome to this Expert HR podcast with me, Laura Merrilees. Today I'm going to be talking to Darren Newman, Expert HR Consultant Editor, about the recent EAT case of Talent Engineering Limited and Smith. This case has highlighted the potential danger for employers of going ahead with a disciplinary or grievance hearing where the employee's chosen companion is unavailable. Darren, before we get into the meat of the case, can we just kick off by reminding our listeners of what the law says about the right to be accompanied at a disciplinary or grievance hearing?
Yeah, thanks, Laura. It's an interesting right because it's quite separate in many ways from the rest of employment law. So it's set out in the Employment Relations Act 1999, and it's section 10 we're looking at. And that says that where a worker is invited by the employer to attend a disciplinary or grievance hearing, they can request, it's got to be a reasonable request, but they can request to be accompanied at the hearing, and their companion can be either a fellow worker or a trade union official. So essentially they have a right to be represented at a disciplinary or grievance hearing. The law calls it a right to be accompanied, but in all essential respects, it's a right to be represented.
And if the employee's chosen companion isn't available on the date that the employee is scheduled for the hearing, what obligation does an employer have under Section 10 to postpone the hearing?
Well, there is a specific provision that deals with that. If the employee or the worker has a chosen representative, and that chosen representative isn't available on the date that the employer has chosen, then they do have a right to postpone it. But crucially, they have to give an alternative date. They can't just say that date isn't convenient, come up with something else. They have to actually propose another date to the employer. That date has to be reasonable, and it has to fall within a period of 5 working days, beginning with the day that was proposed by the employer. So it's a right to postpone, and it's an absolute right to postpone if the employee's representative isn't available. But it's limited in the sense that it's only for those 5 working days.
Okay, so that's the Section 10 right, but separate to that right, and this is crucial in the Talon case, as we'll discuss, there is the long-established right under Section 98 of the Employment Rights Act 1996 not to be unfairly dismissed.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Employment Relations Act right and Section 10 doesn't formally interact with the right not to be unfairly dismissed. So it's a standalone right that you actually bring a claim for, and it doesn't formally say, and if you breach this, it's going to be an automatic unfair dismissal, but nor does it say, if you comply with this, then you're fine. And when it comes to unfair dismissal law, of course, what we're looking for is whether the employer has acted reasonably, and the tribunal looks at all the circumstances of the case. So when we're looking at how it's done its disciplinary process, the question we're asking is not whether some formal test has been met about what dates are being proposed, but whether in all the circumstances the employer has behaved in a reasonable way.
So we're now going to turn to the case itself. Can you briefly run through the facts leading to the tribunal claim?
Yeah, so this is Smith against Talon Engineering Limited. And Ms. Smith was a relatively senior employee within Talon, and she was communicating with someone that she had a long-standing personal relationship with, but was also a supplier. So there was a business relationship that obviously over the years had grown and also had sort of, you know, a level of personal familiarity as well. And in the course of that correspondence that she had, she made a number of disobliging remarks about colleagues. She didn't really name them. She didn't identify them. And she said some things that were quite insulting. I apologize for the vulgar language I'm about to use, but I think it's important that people know exactly what was said. She did actually refer to one colleague as being a knob and a knobhead, and that was the most serious sort of level of insult that was suggested. And the employer took this very seriously and regarded it as potentially gross misconduct and potentially a breach of their bullying procedure. They were also concerned about what she then did with those emails, because there was an allegation that she deleted emails that were relevant to the investigation that was carried out. And they frankly treated it as an issue of gross misconduct and went ahead down that road. And eventually that led to a dismissal.
So she then went on to issue a claim for unfair dismissal in the Bristol Employment Tribunal, and that was successful. And what did the tribunal find? How did they uphold her claim?
Yeah, the way the tribunal approached it was there was a central point about the disciplinary hearing. She was originally invited to come to a disciplinary hearing on the 5th of September, and she was ill, and the employer agreed to postpone the disciplinary hearing, and they set a new date of the 29th of September. But the trouble was that date for the hearing fell during a week when her chosen union representative was away at a conference and wasn't available. And so what they did was the union rep wrote to the employer and responded by suggesting other dates that they could make. They gave a range of dates in October, and the earliest of them was just inside, I think, 2 weeks after the date that was being proposed. And the way the employer looked at it, they thought, well, we've already postponed this once because she was off sick. We're not prepared to postpone it again. And they said they weren't going to do that and they would go ahead with the hearing. Ms. Smith then said that if her representative wasn't coming, she wasn't going to come to the hearing. And the employer decided to proceed with the hearing in her absence.
So taking that all into account, what conclusions did the Bristol ET draw?
Well, the reason they said that the dismissal was unfair, they focused on this issue of postponement, and they focused on two things. First was that they said that a reasonable employer would have agreed to that postponement. It was a relatively short postponement. They gave a very clear date when they would be prepared to go ahead, and the tribunal felt that a reasonable employer would have agreed to that. And secondly, and they probably took this as being the more important point, that the employer had then gone ahead and conducted the hearing in her absence. And they said that there were only limited circumstances in which it would be fair to conduct a disciplinary hearing in the employee's absence. You know, if there was a particular problem with the employee ever being able to attend, if there were extenuating circumstances, none of those applied in this case. The tribunal held it was unfair to go ahead with a disciplinary hearing. So altogether, they held that the dismissal was unfair. They went on to say that there would be compensation payable, but with a 30% deduction. So there was 15% contribution from her to an extent she was responsible for her dismissal because of her misconduct, and also to allow for a limited possibility that there might have otherwise been a fair dismissal, a 15% Polkey deduction. But basically, the unfairness rested in the way in which they'd handled the request for postponement.
But the employer went on to appeal that decision to the EAT and was unsuccessful. Can you just take us through the EAT's rationale in upholding the Bristol ET's decision?
Yeah, so what happened here was at this point, we bring up the right to be accompanied under Section 10 because the Employment Tribunal hadn't referred to that. So they look at the postponement of the hearing and they say, well, a reasonable employer would have agreed to the postponement. But what they don't do is look at Section 10 saying that if there's going to be a postponement, then the employee has to propose a day that's within 5 working days. And they didn't take that into account at all. And the employer said, well, you should have done because that's what sets the standard. And you should have at least considered whether the employer could be said to be reasonable because it at least complied with the Section 10 right. And nor did the tribunal refer to the ACAS Code of Practice on Discipline and Grievance. And the ACAS Code of Practice, if you look at it, when it talks about postponement, it only talks about this 5 working days postponement that we find the employee's got a right to under Section 10. There's no suggestion in the Code of Practice that a reasonable employer would agree to a longer postponement.
But the EAT weren't having that. They weren't buying those arguments from the employer.
Yeah, they completely rejected that. And what they said was, these are two separate rights. The fact that an employer has complied, in a sense, with Section 10, there was no breach of the right to be accompanied per se, doesn't tell you that what they've done is reasonable in all the circumstances. So just because you've complied with the right to be accompanied, that does not mean that you fairly dismissed somebody or that you've conducted the procedure in a reasonable way. And so the tribunal said that wasn't a valid argument. And they went on to say that you therefore couldn't criticize the employee for not turning up to the disciplinary hearing because she'd been denied the reasonable postponement that she'd requested and was therefore unable to be represented by her chosen representative. So on that basis, the tribunal had been entitled to find that it was a fair dismissal.
So Darren, for employers listening to this, they may well have concerns about when they can safely draw the line now around a refusal to postpone a hearing. And neither the tribunal nor the EAT put any timeline on that. But they did allude in sort of fairly broad terms to circumstances when it may be reasonable to refuse to postpone.
Well, you know, we didn't really get very much guidance at all. I mean, the Employment Appeal Tribunal decision is in many ways just a quite technical, well, there's no error of law here because these are two separate rights. And it didn't go on to have a discussion about what sort of postponement might be reasonable and what sort of postponement might not be reasonable. I think it has to be said, if we're looking at this postponement, if we'd looked at it in the cold light of day, or we were advising the employer, and they were due to have a hearing on the 29th of September, and the employee came back and said, my representative's not available, but I can do the 10th of October, I think you would generally advise an employer to agree to that postponement if they possibly can. That's not a massive delay. I think where an employer might be more justified in refusing a postponement is if you're just getting a blank refusal from the employee or the representative saying, no, we can't make that, and no counter proposal. Or the counter proposal is set so far in the future that the employer feels it really can't wait any longer. Or there's reason to believe that even this counter proposal might also fall through because we're not entirely sure that the employee is going to be able to have a representative on that date or able to attend on that particular date. I think it's important in this case that it was a limited request for postponement for a pretty brief period of time, and you can see why a tribunal might feel that it would be reasonable for an employer to be expected to agree to it.
And you might take some reassurance as an employer from knowing that even if procedurally a tribunal finds you to be in the wrong, if you've got strong grounds to dismiss for gross misconduct in the first place, then you'd hope that any award would be substantially reduced in any event.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most important points about unfair dismissal, to be honest, because we can get bogged down in what the fair procedure is to follow and what the appropriate thing to do is. But ultimately, when it comes down to the measure of damages, the tribunal is going to award what they consider to be just and equitable. And if you've got really good cast iron evidence of gross misconduct, then it's very difficult to see how a tribunal is actually going to award substantial damages to that person. They're going to regard them as being entirely to blame for their own dismissal, or on a paltry basis, they'd find that if you cured the procedural defect, if you'd behaved reasonably, the outcome would have still been the same. So in those cases, you very often get 100% deductions if you've got clear evidence of gross misconduct. And in those circumstances, as the employer, you might have lost on the technicality, but you can probably take it as a substantive win. I think the odd thing about this case, though, is the tribunal only thought that it was worth a 15% deduction for contributory fault. You know, they obviously had some problems with the employer essentially sacking somebody for calling their colleague, well, a knobhead. And you can see the point that seems like a very harsh approach to take. But there's something about the way unfair dismissal works, because we've got this band of reasonable responses. Tribunals are really wary of imposing their own view about what's fair and unfair when it comes to the substance of the dismissal. Is it fair to dismiss somebody for this? But they seem to be much more relaxed about imposing their own view of what a reasonable procedure is. So they get very fussy about the procedure, but don't say very much about the substance of it. And I think unfair dismissal law might work better if tribunals were better able to dispense with some of the procedural technicalities and just look at, well, is this a fair thing to do to an employee? And I think in this case, you'd probably say it isn't.
Any final takeaways, Darren, for our listeners?
I think what I'd say to an employer is what you want to happen in a disciplinary process is for a disciplinary hearing to take place and for it to be fair. And you should basically be bending over backwards to try and make sure that hearing takes place. And obviously it needs to take place within a reasonable time frame, and you don't want people deliberately dragging that time frame out. But if there's a way of getting a hearing done, that is going to be far preferable to making a decision to dismiss without a hearing, if that's the choice that you're facing. And if that means waiting a few extra days, which is what it was in this case, then I don't think that's really too much to expect an employer to do.
Okay, well, that's a good note to end on. Thanks very much, Darren. We've got a detailed write-up of the judgment in Tallinn on our Law Reports tool on the site, and we also have plenty of guidance on the right to be accompanied in a how-to guide on dealing with workers' statutory right to be accompanied at disciplinary and grievance hearings. Well, that brings us to the end of this Expert HR podcast. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to you joining us again next time.